Welcome to the T&D podcast brought to you by TomTom. We think you're trucking awesome. You deserve a trucking awesome app. That's why today we're excited to talk about the ultimate trucking companion, TomTom Go Navigation. With premium features designed to make every delivery a breeze, Go Navigation ensures you reach your destination efficiently and stress-free. Hello and welcome back to the Trucking Driver Podcast. My name's Doogie Rankin and I am joined today by...
Paul O'Callaghan.
Our Globetrotter extraordinaire is back in Ireland for the time being, and we were fortunate enough to catch up with you a couple of weeks ago to find out about just some of your adventures. The last time you were abroad, where you were telling us all about your time in New Zealand, which has been featured in the magazine since then. So that was only one part of the trip, though.
Yeah, it was only one part. It was probably the bulk of the trip, but I've never been to South America. And when I just kind of had a look at the map where I was in New Zealand, I said, well, rather than going flying home or back to Ireland West, which would be the normal way, you know, to the Gulf, the likes of Dubai or Doha, somewhere like that, I said, well, why not go east, seeing as it looked kind of, I was sort of halfway at that stage. So I picked one country, and the reason I picked it was purely for convenience. I picked Chile because I could get a direct flight from Auckland to Santiago. That was 11 hours. And after that, it just kind of looked a bit more complicated in terms of getting more flights to, like, Bolivia or somewhere else I had in mind. I've often seen a lot of videos from up around Bolivia, up high up in the mountains, these world's most dangerous roads and all that. And, you know, you obviously have, there's so much to explore there. You could kind of ruin it by trying to do too much in one go. So just for convenience, I just picked Chile, Dougie, and that's where I went and spent about 8 days there. Another advantage of just kind of concentrating on that country was when I wanted to fly out of there, Santiago seems to be quite a hub. I was able to just to fly back to, directly to Dublin with only one stop in Madrid. So that was it. Had a great time there. First time ever on the whole kind of continent of South America. And of course, lots of trucks photographed. Probably one of the main reasons I went there, I will admit, was a famous road called Los Caracoles, which is pretty sure translates to a snail in Spanish. So that's a road with 29 hairpin bends, which leads up to the border, the Christ the Redeemer Tunnel, which is a border tunnel into Argentina. So I'd seen that on a Volvo Trucks YouTube channel, whereby they follow a driver there. I think the video might be about 8 years old. But anyway, it's a really famous road and famous for lots of truck rollovers, and they get a lot of snow up there in the winter. And that was basically what I went to see. What better reason? And absolutely was fascinated with up there. I spent a day up there at the start of the holiday, and then I went back up again for another day at the end, just that I enjoyed it so much. It was great because there was so much traffic passing from other countries. You know, naturally you had Chilean trucks, then Argentinians, they were the next country over. You had Brazilians, you had Uruguayans, Paraguayan trucks, Bolivian trucks. And it was just great to see the mix of different trucks and specifications and brands from all of the different countries, and got a great reception up there. All anyone that saw me out with the camera or video camera, where all the truck drivers were kind of waving and flashing lights and that. So that was definitely worth going to see that alone. You know, sometimes a road is all I need to know about to go and visit a country.
Yeah, well, you can see if geography isn't your strong point, folks. If you go and look at the continent, South America, you've got Argentina, which is kind of the main part of the bottom. And then on the western side, you've got Chile, which is this thin strip that runs right up the coast. Is it one of the thinnest countries in the world?
Yeah, not sure if it's mainly. Yeah, it is. It's the narrowest country. I think from what I've looked up, it averages only something like 170 kilometers in width all the way. So that's quite narrow. And I think they have something like 6,000 kilometers of coastline. Why exactly the borders were designed like that, I don't know. But there's a vast disparity in the sort of terrain and the climate. You know, they've got the Atacama Desert up in the north, and then they have, you know, world famous Patagonia down at the bottom. I think it's actually Penguins down there at one point, and a lot of famous or impressive scenery, mountain fjords and that kind of thing. So yeah, it's quite an interesting country, and the shape, like you say, is bizarre.
Yeah, and of course, being where it is, you're going to get a large variety of different vehicles in terms of the trucks that you're going to see. So you've shown me some pictures on the computer already, and yet there's this fascinating mix where you've got your European trucks, you've got certain American things, and you've also got Asian vehicles, like stuff from Japan as well. So these get, and there's a kind of mix of kind of new to old stuff as well. So what kind of things were you experiencing out there? How does it work? Are they quite wild and rough and ready? Or is it kind of somewhere that's developing? Is the road network sort of coming on or improving? What's it like?
Yeah, so Chile is one of the most, if not the most, prosperous countries in Latin America. I think they have the highest GDP. There's a lot of mining there. I think they have big reserves of copper and other kind of rare minerals, I should say, like iodine and lithium and things like that. So definitely they have quite a good economy. And that was reflected in, firstly, the road network. So I flew into Santiago. That was capital city. A lot of good motorway network. It kind of reminded me like of Spain in a lot of ways, because like they had been, conquered by the Spanish, I think back in the 16th century or something. So kind of getting out of the city then, I always want to get out in the countryside and see what it's like. So I kind of went north from there. And even the, what we call like the national roads there were absolutely in top condition, I tried to ask a few people, how come the roads are so good? And especially how quiet they were. Those places I went, like the roads were so quiet. We'll just say at this stage, I'm kind of north kind of east of Santiago. And I just had a small little car. It was only a Peugeot 208. So on the big kind of open road, obviously a bit underpowered at that kind of power, but it was an absolutely gorgeous little handler. Had a great time, great crack firing it around bends. But I just found some roads that were in really, really good condition and just a joy to drive on. So that was kind of a surprise. And a lot of times, if I go somewhere, the kind of first choice is to hire a motorbike. Motorbike hire was actually a lot more expensive, was difficult to find. Also, difficult to find somewhere you could hire the gear. Plus the fact, more importantly, that the temperatures when I was there were up in the, mid or to low kind of 30s, so not really that enjoyable when you're on a motorbike. So just an interesting one. When I got up to those, up in that Caracoles, the mountain kind of roads up in the Andes, they were doing some roadworks there at the time, and they seemed to use concrete on the road. So they do it in kind of concrete sections. So I'm not sure if that's to do with, winter time when it freezes over, if it's to do with shifting soil conditions. I'm sure lads who are into road building will be able to explain why they use kind of concrete roads in particular. But no, it was definitely an impressive road network. The only thing was, so you've got, there's a big long kind of a motorway that it's part of the Pan American Highway. I'm pretty sure it starts up in Puto in Alaska or something, and it's a network of roads, kind of de facto motorway network. But I did a section of that, so I went up as far as a place called La Serena, not very far at all, but like the last thing I wanted to be doing was sitting on a motorway. But I did it just to kind of get a flavor of what the motorway network was like, and just to see what sort of different trucks you'd have on that road. And it's kind of quite funny, you'd come through it, a lot of it was quite deserted, but then you'd come to kind of more sort of urban areas or built up areas where the people seem to be, selling a lot of stuff on the side of a dual carriageway. But that was just kind of the dumb thing. So it was nice to find that little bit of, still a bit of kind of edginess, nothing is kind of just really that kind of sterile and perfect either. There's still a nice kind of a South American vibe to it. And I pulled off a couple of places off the motorway just to see where the trucks were parking and go into a couple of traditional sort of restaurants and that. But the thing I noticed on that road, we'll say leading up, you're heading up towards Peru there was a lot more kind of American style trucks, and maybe trucks that have been imported secondhand. A lot of I suppose, internationals, Freightliners, one, maybe an odd, you'd see an odd Peterbilt, an odd Kenworth, but it was fascinating to see stuff like that. And like you said, then you'd see a Japanese truck. Then you had your kind of your European trucks. Their main trucks, when I was on the up on the Caracolas for the Chileans, seemed to be like next-gen Scanias, all six cylinders, like R cabs, seemed quite popular. Tag axles were a big thing out there. So it was interesting to see some countries like Bolivia, it seems to be all 4x2 and nearly 100% Volvos, just from the few that I'd seen. Whereas in Chile, it was, you know, 6x2 tags. You had Volvos as well as your Scanias. There was Ivecos. I saw a couple of DAFs, MANs. And then, of course, then you had all the stuff from Brazil and Argentina, which you'll see in the pictures. Like, it was, you know, the holy grail was to see a couple of old Brazilian T-cab 113s, you know, and that original kind of a blue demo color. And then really unusual stuff that we wouldn't have seen before, like those bonneted Mercedes-Benz Atrons, I'm pretty sure they're called. Built in Brazil, I think, from sort of about maybe 2011 or 2012. They stopped making them in 2016. I think they built about 30,000 of them, but they seem to be really popular with the Argentinians and the Brazilians. Probably just a cheap, or not, I don't want to say cheap, but like a basic kind of a rugged truck that suited the markets there, you know. So it was fascinating to see such a wide variety of stuff.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, I mean, all the countries around there, I mean, they have had a lot of economic problems in recent years in terms of, like, there was a lot of wars and things to deal with drugs and cartels as well. And it would, you know, hopefully, moving forward, we've seen some progress in recent times, because these countries are, like you said, they're incredibly rich in resources and they've got good weather as well. And you would like to hope and think that in the future, as these countries can really develop, they've got so much potential, especially if you're sitting on lithium mines and copper mines, all these things that are going to be essential going forward. So you said you saw next gen Scanias.
Quite a lot of those in Chile, and they were predominantly, we'll say, probably 500s, maybe a couple of 540s, R cabs, you know, R's with a high roof option, and that's kind of what seemed to be very popular there.
Yeah, I would like to know worldwide. I'd love to get the sales figures worldwide for who buys the most S series cabs. It wouldn't surprise me if the UK and like Ireland would be high up there, at least percentage wise, not overall numbers, because it seems to be so many other places that you go, it's all R cabs. That seems to be the thing to
correct. Yeah.
Thing to go for.
Where to get this kind of intriguing data? I'm not sure, but
I'm going to ask Scania and see if they can tell me sort of worldwide who buys what and where. Because obviously all these countries will have the little variations on what weights pull what, because you can see some different axle setups on the trailers there. With some of them, have got the trailers, they tend to run tandem. They don't tend to run super singles quite as much. And I guess that's probably down to getting a puncture. If you don't have access to tyres, perhaps quite so easily. I don't know.
Could be, and also an awful lot of ex US trailers imported there that they've added a third axle into, but they've added that axle forward of the tandem.
Yeah, you can see that. There's a great picture they've got there. It's an American bonneted Volvo VN, the traditional American one. And then just coming along the side of it is a version 4FH, which looks like pure European specs. So you've got the two different sides of the coin together there.
And I come from New Zealand, which I've always admired for its diversity in truck brands. And after a couple of days in Chile, I thought, you know, actually I found somewhere that has more diversity because of their, I presume, proximity to the US market, and maybe, you know, due to their limits and stuff like that. But you could see, so I saw for example, you've mentioned it there, a Volvo VN. And then I saw an actual, an NH12 as well. So the NH12 would have came from Brazil. So it's funny, like they were big into their bonnets. I'm pretty sure like the NH12s were built in Brazil. Scania would have had a manufacturing plant for their bonneted trucks there. And the last bonneted trucks, we'll say, by a European manufacturer were those Mercedes-Benz Atrons, which it's said a while ago, finished in 2016. So there was just such an eclectic mix of stuff there. Even, you know, those, I don't even know what they're called. Some of those, I sent you a picture of a Volkswagen truck. A couple,
yes.
One with like an MAN sort of type cab. And then one with a small little cab. It's like almost like an LT kind of style.
Yeah, I noticed that. The Volkswagen truck looks to me like a pure bit of badge engineering. That's an MAN TGX with a Volkswagen badge on it, which of course they are the same company, the Traton Group now. So it may well be the case that Volkswagen's a more recognisable brand or whatever, but that was... Yeah, that looks to me almost, that's a pure TGX. It says Meteor on the front, but I'm not sure if that's the truck. I think it might be a Volkswagen Meteor. And then, of course, you've got that little cabbed one, which is almost, it's a tiny cab that. It's
That was definitely the smallest cab of all I had seen, and he was doing international work with that. That's why I just sort of grabbed a quick snap of that. You know, just like you said, with our big S cabs and going home to sleep at nighttime, and then you just saw that guy in his tiny little cab. Yeah, it was funny.
Yeah, because I mean, that's not even the size of, say, a DAF CF. That's like a DAF LF cab sort of size. Yeah, but you're not familiar with that type of truck at all.
No. So it was fascinating. And then, of course, you have the likes of, you know, those Volvo VNs. They're massive. But where I was on that kind of that pass into Argentina was the smaller stuff. And then out on the main kind of highway, sort of north-south, was the bigger stuff. But I actually came upon an accident as well, which is quite fitting, seeing as the reason I went to see that road was because it's, you know, so dangerous and has a reputation. I think there's a certain amount of people killed there every year. And it was one of those Mercedes-Benz Atrons had turned over not long, I'd say, before I'd arrived, because as I was there throughout the day, there was a kind of a recovery mission just taking place. I just sent you a picture of it. Maybe you have it there. I've sent you.
Yeah, I've got it. Got it in front of me there. So that's, so these hairpin, you can see it's a whole section of hairpin bends, twisting back and forth and back and forth as it climbs up through these mountains. And it looks an enormous climb. It looks like it goes on for miles. We might have to put some of these pictures online so those that are listening to this can get an indication of what we're looking at. But there's like a picture of the truck in the foreground, and then away down in the background, there's trucks that are like little specks coming round the corners going up. And as you look off into the distance further up, there's trucks dotted about away further up, all the way up there. So, yeah, if you put one, it looks like, to be fair, the road does look relatively spacious. It looks quite wide with a good surface on it, from what I can see in the just the still pictures there.
Yeah, it was quite wide. According to what the internet said, it says the path climbs to an elevation of 10,500 feet. So whatever, 3,175 metres, and has no roadside safety barriers, which you can see is obviously evident from the photographs there.
Well, of course, these guys are highly unlikely to be running disc brakes all round, and, you know, jake brakes, retarders, engine brakes aren't necessarily going to be standard fit either. So you could be more prone to coming a cropper than you might think sitting behind the wheel of one of our modern European trucks.
Slow and steady seemed to be the way to go. Now, it looked to me like a lot of the guys were heading back towards Argentina. Not all were fully freighted. So whether or not that was to do with the fact that Chile would have a lot of ports, you can see, you know, by their kind of their location there, they have all those that port kind of access there to the sea. So it looked like there was a lot of trucks kind of running back empty, axles up. But one of the kind of, I suppose, best things I saw was there was an ex Dutch companies. A lot of people will be familiar with Vanden Bosch. The minute I saw it, I was like, that's definitely an ex Vanden Bosch green. And I probably didn't send you a picture, but it's a green, cream and red, quite a distinctive color scheme. A version one FH12 380. He was just laboring up that hill, fully loaded, and, you know, big smile on his face, waved. And I just thought, you know what, that's just a nice bit of trucking there to see that. And just taking his time steady. Well, he probably couldn't go any faster anyway, you know. But there was some trucks like that. There was another time that was, I saw like, a P114. I think it could have been a 380, big line of stuff behind him. But, you know, it all worked, and guys just taking their time, coming down, you know, looking after their brakes, and just a nice bit of... kind of trucking. So yeah, I went back up there. You can see why, you know, how impressive it was. I went back up there for a second day and added to the, like, already too many photographs I had, but, you know, so what, that's what you're into.
Yeah, it looks like magnificent road, sort of thing you would really enjoy in a car. I mean, what, you had a little, yeah, Peugeot 208, that'd be a nice handling car, even though if it wasn't very fast. So I mean, you probably would have had a bit of fun.
Beautiful. I've just been away today in a borrowed car, a new Mercedes-Benz. Well, it's only a couple of years old, Mercedes-Benz E-Class, and, you know, obviously comfort second to none. Lots of newfangled technical kind of gimmicks and gadgetry and all sorts of things. And, you know, I just, after a while, it's almost a car you kind of forget you're driving it. You know, it didn't really feel. Of course, it's automatic, as most modern cars are, you know, but I actually had a lot more fun in that little 208. I couldn't believe just the steering wheel was actually like something you'd have in a sort of a simulated, you know, computer kind of a game, where it had this little small flat piece at the end. It was just tiny and chunky, kind of, you know, old school Formula One-esque style. And the minute you turn the steering wheel, you could just feel the back of it turning in, and I had a really, really good time on it. Just an interesting thing as well, after, you know, that, leaving aside the Caracolas, I went south of Santiago, because I wanted to see the kind of the fertile area where they grow an awful lot of fruit down there, the likes of cherries, cranberries, grapes, kiwis, peaches, and that goes on for a long way. So the kind of the truck kind of landscape changed when I'm down there, because those guys were going short distance, you know, transporting fruit and veg. There was kind of older trucks. So I saw a couple of old Eurotechs down there, and I hadn't seen really any Scania V8s up to that point. And down there, I actually saw a couple of 143s and a couple of trucks which had clearly been imported from Sweden, Denmark, and that kind of thing. Couple of old Mercedes-Benz down there as well, 1748, which had come from either Germany or Austria. Sorry, 2248 or 2448, I can't remember now. And then a 2244 as well, which is quite old. Like, it's probably an 86, 87 truck and was still working away. So that was why you went to Chile.
Yeah, you could look. I mean, one of the pictures you've got with the landscape, which just goes way, way, way off into the distance. It kind of reminds me of those scenes in Red Dead Redemption playing out on the Xbox when looking out. It looks like it hasn't changed. Probably that landscape looks like it potentially hasn't changed for hundreds of years to that. Exactly. And it just goes off for like miles and miles into the distance.
Miles and miles. And there was a lot of, naturally, of course, well, it's the Andes Mountains, so, you know, it does what it says in the tin, but... Big hills there, Dougie, and it was kind of interesting that you don't see this massive kind of horsepower quest we have over here. Like, I suppose the most powerful I would have seen would have been 540, you know, be that an FH 540 Volvo or a Scania 6-cylinder 540. That was as much as they had, but yeah, definitely big hills over there. Yeah,
it's worth noting how completely spoiled we are now in terms of horsepower and the grunt that the trucks that we've got for the work that we do. When you look at so many other parts of the world where these guys are plodding on with 380 horsepower, well, 380 when it was new, plodding on and getting the job done. And your common or garden standard fleet truck now is quite often around 500 horsepower, 2,500 newton meters of torque, and nobody thinks twice about it now.
Yeah. So, you know, the only, I suppose, downside was I inquired about bringing the car into Argentina, because it's always nice to go and try and do a loop, you know, start point A and do it, whatever, do a loop and come back and see something different all the way along. I couldn't bring the car into Argentina because you needed some sort of insurance permit, and to do that would have taken a week. So things are always done at kind of very last minute, late kind of notice. So I didn't have time for that. So, you know, it would have been nice to do that. But I still saw enough there. I went up as far as that kind of Christ the Redeemer tunnel. I went as far as I could. And actually, as I turned around at the entrance to the tunnel, I had to come back down through Chilean immigration. And of course, I had no passport on with me because I left that in the hotel, but I was able to explain to them as best I could in the Spanish I had that I was just up there taking pictures, and they let me go. But definitely, look, that was just a little kind of an introduction to somewhere I'd never been. And for whenever I ever get to go there again, I'll be definitely want to go back and see Bolivia now, is somewhere that sort of fast. Anytime I saw a truck with a Bolivian reg, I was like, yeah, that's, you know, you could tell it's nearly all ex-European imports, be that from Scandinavia or from, you know, Benelux region or places like that. But they've got some pretty big roads, and I'm sure a bit less affluent than Chile as well. You know, just another thing I meant to say as well is Chile, Augusto Pinochet, you probably would have heard of him.
Oh, yes, he's very well known. I don't know if you remember the story when he turned up in the UK a few years ago.
No.
Yeah, he visited the UK. This wasn't all that long ago. And obviously he was a naughty character, General Augusto Pinochet. He was in trouble for war crimes and things.
That was a nice way of putting that.
Yeah, and I think there was an effort to try and arrest him in the UK, and it caused an international outcry. But he was a guy, yes, he was a dictator who seized power in Chile and kind of ruled it with an iron fist.
That's right. He was there for 16 years, and I think there was like 3,000 people disappeared or were murdered one way or another. But how did you describe him? A naughty boy.
Yeah, one of those. These kind of dictators were all over South America and all these countries, and a lot of them have struggled with, even when they get democratic governments installed. There's been a lot of struggles with the drug cartels because, of course, the most famous exports of Peru and Bolivia, of course, is the old marching powder.
Yeah.
That's what they're known for, and it's caused an enormous amount of death and struggles and corruption in those countries, which are otherwise, you know, really rich in natural resources and should be thriving. You know, I would like to hope that for the future things would look a little brighter. And it was nice to see when you were in Chile, it looked to be that it was in pretty good shape. What were the people like? What was the food like and things like that? Were you able to experience a little bit of culture?
Yeah, people were very nice, and food reminded me an awful lot of being in Spain. There was one night I actually stayed in a hotel two nights in a little town called Los Andes. Funny enough, that was kind of almost like the gateway to the Caracoles. And I stayed in a little lovely little hotel there. Looked a bit grotty from the outside. It was only about 40, I think it was only about 40 or 45 euros, probably one of the cheaper places I stayed in. But, you know, everything inside, it was clean. Actually, couldn't have been any better. And I sat in there and had an evening meal and had breakfast there. And I was having the evening meal, they had soccer on the TV, and it was just like you were in a restaurant. Anyone who's driven trucks or has been in Spain, you know, you go into these kind of restaurants in the evening time for the menu del día, and the soccer is on the TV, and it was just, and even the menu, you know, mixed salad for starter, and then your lomo and different things for main course, and very nice people. Anyone I met there was very friendly as well. So, I couldn't fault it in that regard.
Yeah, no, that's really good. I've just actually found the thing about Pinochet. What happened was he was arrested in London on charges of genocide and terrorism that include murder in October 1998. He was placed under house arrest in Britain, initiating a public relations battle, and he was released in March 2000 on medical grounds without facing trial. And then he was returned to Chile, and then he was basically, for the rest of his life, he was sort of involved with court cases where they were trying to get him on all sorts of different war crimes. There's things about that, but if you just dip in and out of it, there was something here. A biochemist was also alleged to have created black cocaine, which Pinochet then sold in Europe and the United States. The money for the trade was allegedly deposited to Pinochet's bank accounts and so on. But yeah, thankfully, a lot of these dictators are kind of fallen by the wayside now, and there's kind of better, more progressive regimes in place in these countries. Yeah, because they're a fascinating place to visit. I don't know anybody that's ever actually been to Chile before.
Speaking of progressivism and that, one thing I did notice that while I just had a little look into the country before I went there was that they were having a couple of referendums on rewriting the constitution. So it seemed like there was this sort of a big push to the left, and then they put it out to a referendum to the people, and it was rejected. And I think they've had a couple of kind of referendums that didn't go the way the government wanted them to go. So I kind of lost interest in what was happening. But you know, definitely going through a period of transition there, big time. But that was Chile.
You're listening to the Truck and Driver podcast, brought to you by TomTom. The TomTom Go navigation offers a specific set of truck features. You can set your cargo and truck dimensions for specific routes, so you can drive confidently on suitable roads, making every journey efficient and reliable. Truck yeah. Have you seen on our Truck and Driver social media over the past week, I did Manual Week?
I have indeed.
Well, for whatever reason, I don't know why, but nothing gets our viewership or readership, whatever, nothing piques our interest, gets the blood pumping as much as when we have discussions about manual gearbox trucks.
I did notice that the amount of comments on Facebook for that were probably 10 to 20 times more than anything else.
I think a lot of it's just, it's a bit of nostalgia. People like to look back on them. I know you always get the guys who say, oh, I'd give up my truck tomorrow to get back in, you know, some bad eating twin splitter. They don't, in the real world, they don't really sort of mean that. So what you mean is you would like to have a shot of one for a day
still like the theory. Still like the notion that they're available. I think it's the fact now that they're gone. I think that's what kind of...
Well, certainly, there was definitely a group of buyers out there who were still buying manuals. And I think because some of the manufacturers who were still... Obviously, Volvo binned them in 2018. MAN, right-hand drive, not that long after it. DAF and Scania were kind of the last ones to do it. But they didn't promote it at all. And they would kind of dissuade some guys, perhaps, coupled with the fact it's difficult to get drivers for them now, but there's definitely a loyal band out there, particularly in Ireland, Scotland, some of the more rural areas of England and Wales, who would still want to have that option. And it is sad that it's come to the end of an era, and a lot of it's down to the whole integration of technology with the trucks in terms of safety systems, whereby the truck has to be able to have control of the gears to be able to sort of bring it to a complete halt and do certain things. But yeah, the Manual Week, just at the moment, I've been keeping an eye on the thread for it, and it's almost, the thread has reached 3.9 million people, which is just mind-boggling.
In comparison to what would a normal thread be?
Well, that's a quick look.
Roughly.
I mean, successful thread. I mean, Facebook's bizarre with the algorithms and the way that if you put a post up and it doesn't get traction, so, like hardly any people see it. To give you an idea, I can see on here, like one post might do 5,000 people reached. The next one might do. There's one there. When I did one in the Volvo, the end of the Volvo manuals and introduction of the iShift, that hit 71,000 people, which is pretty good. We've got one there, a bit of British muscle with an ERF, 90,000 people. There's one in Isuzu, little Isuzu trucks, 25,000 people. But then you get other ones where it's just a couple of thousand, and it's hard to predict because things need to get traction in a certain amount of comments straight away. But the original manual post genuinely went full on viral. In fact, it's now on 4.3 million people.
Speaking of, I drove a very rare manual. I'm just after thinking of it now. A couple of days ago, I drove a 1994 Renault G230 left-hand drive with a manual box, no high-low, no splitter, and it had six gears laid out in a traditional pattern. So you started off first and then you went across 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Don't know what
was it,
make, I presume it was a Renault box, obviously. Yeah, go on.
What was that for? What on earth were you doing driving that?
What on earth? So I just said I'd give the lads a mention. So this was a fire engine that was imported from Holland. It was sold new in France. And a group of guys from Ireland drove it on a rally called the Bamako Rally, which goes from Budapest to Sierra Leone. Pretty sure they finished in. So they left Ireland, got a direct ferry to France, and drove down all the way through France and Spain and met the rally in Fez in Morocco. So there was six guys in total. Five of them were mechanics. Truck mechanics, car mechanics, one carpenter, and they did that rally, which went all the way down to Morocco, Mauritania, I think Senegal, and into Guinea. But anyway, I just called over to them just to have a look at the truck and take some notes and do an article. Quite fascinating, really. And I just had a bit of a drive with the truck, and I found that gearbox a bit of a handful, to be honest, because it was just kind of hard to know where you were with the gears, you know. So you were six gears across in a pattern. So I just thought about that. It'll be an interesting one for the magazine. Yeah, the Bamako Rally. Have you ever heard of it?
I certainly have not heard of it. There used to be back in the noughties, it used to be quite a big thing to do European banger rallies in the cars, and whereby you would buy a car with a £100 budget and then you would go out on these sort of organised tours whereby a whole squad of you would go out and go and drive all around Europe, go around the Alps and everything in this banger of a car and have an amazing bucket list experience. That sort of stuff seems to have fallen by the wayside a bit. I don't see that so much anymore. But you did also get these much more intense and involved rallies, which involved, not Russia anymore, but you used to be able to go out to places like Russia, and you used to do a lot of African things, be it in, commercial vehicles or cars, and they were the sort of hardcore ones where you were putting your driving and your wits and mechanical skills to the test, which would be more of my sort of thing. A lot of the rallies, the banger rallies, became really accessible to sort of Joe Public. So it'd be like, oh, we've got a big driving day tomorrow. We're doing 100 miles and then it's fancy dress day. And then we're going to be stopping here to do shopping for the day. And I'm like, off to hell with that.
Right down your street, a bit of Bert Reynolds carry on.
Exactly the opposite. I'm like, if I'm going to go in with
mechanical skills,
if I was doing a rally like that, I want to be doing 600 or 700 miles a day and pushing it. I've got no time for any of that sort of crap. I want to be doing as much of the country as possible, but none of the rallies were ever set up for that sort of thing. I pulled out of one last year because it was just exactly that. It was fancy dress day and all this, and I was like, nah, not for me, thanks. I'm going full on smoking the bandit spec for all that kind of stuff. MAN in the UK, their last year for manual gearboxes was 2018, and as far as anybody was aware, that was MAN had got rid of all manual gearboxes. You couldn't get one anymore. Well, as it turns out, a Norwegian haulier had popped up, and he's got a 2023 TGX with a 16-speed manual with a comfort shift in it. So I was speaking to the chap. Oh. His name's Odd Rune Gugadal, and he's got a fleet of MAN tippers, and he reckons he might have been the only people in Norway to have bought one of these manual trucks. But I was like, well, wait a minute, this is controversial. So I was like, so the manufacturers haven't necessarily completely binned off manual trucks. They've just stopped doing it in right-hand drive, because it certainly seems at least MAN have them available. So I was chatting to him. I said, yeah, look, I would love to come and do an article on your fleet of trucks. And he said, yeah, that would be fantastic. We would love to have you along. So he sent me the address for it. And I was thinking, well, if I go in this Scania event with the battery electric trucks, I wonder if they would mind too much if I was to somehow take some extra time there to go and see.
Technically, it's the same parent company.
Same company. While I was already over there, I was wondering if I could somehow change my flights and go out and see them, because they're very smart trucks. Being Norwegian, it looks like a rigid, like a Tridom, where it's got the two drive axles in the middle with a steer in the back on a rigid, and then it's got the trailer with the long bar, the tipping trailer, with two or three axles on the trailer. And they've got, like, it looks like tractor units as well. And I thought it would be really interesting to go and see this Norwegian company and find out a little bit more about the last surviving manuals and whether or not you could still get them at all. Because there's certain people that are like running to Europe a bit, and there's other guys that wouldn't care if it was a left-hand drive and may yet still be tempted to go and buy one. I know that Iveco do offer their X-Way, which is a construction-orientated version of the S-Way. That was available with a manual gearbox in it, because that was Bob Beach went and test drove one in Italy not that long ago at all. But the thing with the manuals is the manufacturers don't tend to really like to promote them at all. It's not the sort of thing. If they do it, it's almost like, yeah, you want a manual. It's like, go and walk around the side of the building and go to the door at the back and meet a bloke. Meet a bloke there, say a password and get to come into that manual club. First rule about manual club, there is no manual club.
You've said it now. You're going to have to exhaust all avenues to try and get that one in the bag anyway at this point. So
I am, brother. They fascinate people. I mean, and everybody knows that modern automatics are so good now. They're phenomenal. You're going up those great big hills and Italy or whatever, and that thing flicks down a gear almost seamlessly. You can't do that with a stick. But we don't drive trucks purely by our head. We drive them also by our heart. Mm. And it's what comes from our heart and the passion that we have is what makes the industry and driving what it is. It makes us able to tolerate all the other crap that goes along with it and make the good times as good as they are. Well, I tell you what, this podcast has flown in. It's been great to have you back on again. Now, you are only in, just to finish off, you're only in Ireland for a short period again before you're going back out to do your season in Australia. Is that correct?
That is correct, yeah. I've committed to doing another season in Australia on the cattle road trains. So I'm going to be heading off in a week's time, and I'm quite looking forward to it now.
Yeah, I can imagine. It'll be good to get back into the swing of things out there again. What will you be driving? Will you be back out and...
The same truck that I was driving last season. From what I've been told, it hasn't had any other drivers on it since. Like, things have been kind of quiet and just starting to ramp back up again now. So I just left it as it is, gave it a good clean, left the bed made and it left everything as it is. So I'm pretty certain that once I get back out there, I'll just be kind of stepping off the plane, and if things are busy, it'll be straight into the truck. I've done it before where I've kind of got back into work on the same day. So that'll be back to Road Ranger non-synchromesh gearbox, Dougie gearboxes, No digicards, no ABS, no EBS, no NES.
No high-vis vest.
We just kind of backed, no high-vis vest, no, just big bonnets, split windscreen, stone guard, bug deflector, and away you go. So that's
fantastic.
Looking forward to that, and yeah, it's so look, it's just a different world.
So how long are you going to be out there for?
Last year, I started in, so this year I'll be obviously starting in early April, and last year I started in early May, and I stayed right up until Christmas. Had a 3 weeks off kind of in between there when I came home for Gaydon and a few of those shows. Whether or not that happens this year, debatable, unless things go really quiet. See, every season is kind of different out there, but to answer your question, I suppose like I could stay there until working pretty full on until November kind of time into December. Of course, if it rains, you'll finish in November. If it doesn't, like it's what happened last season, you'll work right up until December. But at this point in time, I'm looking forward to it. You have sun all the time there, weather, no stress, long hours. But I mean, it's I enjoy it when you enjoy driving and you're kind of left alone to get on with your work. It's sort of nowhere else really. You'd kind of rather be at that moment in time,
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So how long is it before you go back in?
So it'll be a week from tomorrow.
A week from tomorrow. So what are you doing with your last week that you've got left?
Well, in first thing in the morning I'll be writing up that article that for you that I went up to the north to do today. And bit more writing, another one I'll try and get around to do, and then apart from that, then just a little bit of socializing and sort of spend a bit of time with family and friends, and a few of my fleet of vehicles to be kind of put back into the rightful storage and that kind of thing. So that'll keep me busy.
Yeah. Hey, well, good luck with that. It's been fantastic to catch up with you. Guys, if you're looking to see some of the pictures from this chilly escapade, if you look at the link in this podcast description, we will put one in there for you so you can see some of the trucks that we've been talking about, and look out for Paul's report from his adventures in Chile in the June edition of Trucking Driver, which happens to be our 2024 Scania bumper edition.
Yep, so that's not the upcoming one's the one after that, isn't it?
Yep, we've got that one. That one's going to be in there in the next issue.
Excellent.
All right, well, thank you very much, Paul.
Thanks, Dougie. No problem.
Cheers. Catch you later. Cheers. Take care.
See ya.
Thank you for tuning in to the Truckin' Driver podcast, proudly sponsored by TomTom. As a special thanks to our listeners for trucking through the holiday season, we're giving away 1 month free of TomTom Go Navigation Truck. Simply download the Go Navigation app and use the code TRUCKYEAH, that's TRUCKYEAH, when subscribing. Safe travels, folks.